Good morning. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. Now, my name is Andrew Popel, and it is time, it's our time of the week again. It is Final Draft, and Final Draft is books writing and literary culture here on your airwaves, on your digital platform of choice, wherever you are listening. I am here to talk books with you. I want to share the reading pleasure. And I have a great show lined up for you today. I say that every week, don't I? Because I always think it is a great show. I'm really excited to share new Australian writers. And for me, that makes for some really great conversation. So I hope you are ready to share a conversation with a really exciting Victorian writer. Her name is Alice Bishop, and she has a collection out. It is called A Constant Hum. A Constant Hum looks at the aftermath of bushfire. It sort of takes its inception from the Black Saturday bushfires and explores the myriad of stories that emerge, the stories that extend beyond the event and into the ways that we cope and we live our lives. That's Alice Bishop's A Constant Hum, and I'm really excited to be sharing that with you on the show today. I also have coming up on the show today, I've been foreshadowing this for a couple of months now. About a year ago, in fact, it is a year ago, I'm going to tell you it's our first birthday, Final Draft launched a podcast. It is the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. And I want to celebrate our first birthday by talking about some of the most popular and your favourite episodes. So I am also going to be sharing some of the most listened to episodes on the Great Conversations podcast, because I want to keep sharing amazing Australian writers with you. And one way is for you to have the podcast, you subscribe to it, and you have got, I think there's 60 odd episodes that you can already listen to with a new one going up every week. So if you don't know what to read, if you just want to learn a little bit more about how Australia's literary culture affects our broader culture, the Great Conversations podcast is there for you. So that's Alice Bishop's A Constant Hum, and a little bit of a happy birthday to the Great Conversations podcast. And it's all coming up after this short break.
Fresh from thrilling dance floors across the globe, British electronic duo Marabou State make their opera house debut this July. After making waves with their 2015 debut Portraits, Marabou State bring their kaleidoscopic new classic Kingdoms in Colour, filled with sounds and inspiration from places far and wide, including Delhi, Sydney and Lisbon. Don't miss Marabou State on July 17. Book now at sydneyoperahouse.com. 2SER sponsors.
You're tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, and I am Andrew Popel. I'm joined on the line by Alice Bishop. Alice is a Victorian author. Her short stories and essays have been published in Mianjin, Southerly, The Griffith Review, and many more. And we are here to discuss her short story collection, A Constant Hum. Alice, first of all, let me welcome you to Final Draft.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for having me. I feel very lucky to be on your program.
Look, it is an absolute pleasure, because A Constant Hum is a collection, I confessed off air, that has really moved me. It's a collection of stories that grapple with the aftermath of bushfire. And there's this extraordinary range and feeling in the nearly 50 stories in the collection. And I think it's beyond me to offer some sort of pithy synopsis of what the book is. Although I really hope our conversation will reveal some insights. I am interested, though, in how you introduce this collection to people.
Well, thank you for your praise. I'm glad it affected you. I think I tend to introduce this collection. I do frame it with the idea that it came out of Black Saturday, but I think the fire itself is a bit of a through line for the collection, and the collection's about a lot more than just the bushfires of Black Saturday. And I kind of do introduce the collection, though, about using the kind of the fire as that framework. So I started writing the collection when I was, I think, 25 in 2012, and I've been working on it pretty constantly throughout the last 7 or 8 years. And I feel like it's been a long time coming, but I've just been really lucky to be working with text in the last year or so, and really shaping the collection into what it is today. And it definitely looks much different to what it was when I submitted it. So that's the beauty of a brilliant editor and a great publishing house. But
David Winter's your editor, isn't he?
He is. He's a fantastic editor.
Let's give him a shout out. He's a great friend of the show. And David and I have regular chats on Final Draft, so I'm happy to give him a shout out.
Yeah. He deserves a shout out.
Yeah, and look, the first thing that struck me actually going into the book is that this is a topic that through media and discussion and even through history, much of Australia might think that they have some idea about. We certainly have a thirst for understanding, as you know, we can see through the recent success of Chloe Hooper's The Arsonist testifies. But as I read the collection, I realised there are these intricacies and details beyond what I could ever imagine. And I wanted to know, what sort of understanding did you want to give readers, or what hopes did you have for the readers coming to A Constant Hum?
It's funny, it kind of started not necessarily as a book purely about Black Saturday aftermath, in the fact that I was writing a lot of stuff about relationships, a lot of stuff about the landscape, a lot of stuff about the place I grew up in, which is called Christmas Hills, which was raised by Black Saturday, and our house was raised by Black Saturday. But I was kind of writing all of these stories, and even when I was going overseas and writing stories overseas, it took me a while to realise that was what I was really writing about, and I think I'd started writing A Constant Hum in 2009 when we went back to the house and there was nothing left. And I think so much of writing is, you think writing is, you know, putting pen to paper or being on your laptop, but you're really just doing it in your head, like throughout the years and throughout the months and weeks and days. And I think this book has come through so many years of thinking about the fires in different ways and thinking about natural disasters around the world and it was years after the fact that little things just kept popping up in our community and small struggles, and whether it's post-traumatic stress or whether it's, domestic violence, which kind of flourishes after natural disaster, and all these different kind of things that kind of permeate life. And I really wanted to kind of give those issues a bit of space.
I also got through the stories an idea that perhaps there is a limit to compassion that is really artificial, and that at some point perhaps people that are outside the event start to think, well, when is enough enough? And we fail to appreciate the very human story that we mentioned earlier is going to reverberate through years, if not decades. It's sort of, well, to be really, really crass and boil it down, there's sort of a why can't you just be happy to be alive type of failure of compassion.
Sure, and I think that's something that's just human. And I think whether you lose touch wood, I haven't lost anyone close to me, but if you lose a parent or you lose a grandparent or, you know, I'm always reading those stories too, or essays where it's like, you know, someone dies and you go through those anniversaries of, you know, it's a week or a month or a year, and then there's that real sense of loss that the world keeps turning, and it has to keep turning. I think, you know, it's impossible to dwell on everything forever and you have to move on, but it's more of a just how do you grapple with that if you are still struggling, and do we as a culture maybe not talk about that enough? And we're talking about it more, help, especially with kind of the gendered roles of, after bushfire, of men, you know, getting on with things, and women being in caring roles and not being able to talk about their feelings because they're supporting men in the community.
Yeah, and you've really beautifully segued me here, because I want to give the reader some experience of the stories. As I mentioned, there's some nearly 50 stories in A Constant Hum. And from what you were just talking about there, especially the gendered roles, I wanted to bring us to Kangaroo Paw, which appears sort of in the second half of the collection. In the collection is split into sort of three books, and this is in the third book. And I was really interested in the ways that you represent these binary ideas of gender that seem to flare up around catastrophe. Who is going to be the defender? Who's a nurturer? Who's a rebuilder? In Kangaroo Paw, you highlight this through the experience of a woman in the Country Fire Authority. And I wondered what this experience of danger can and tragedy can teach us about these roles that we perhaps sometimes artificially try and create.
Yeah, I was, to be frank, I was a little bit hesitant to touch too much on the CFA in the book because I know it's quite a political issue and there are some brilliant, people working in the CFA, but it's also been quite plagued by bullying and a lot of kind of political stuff recently. But I've really been grateful over the past few years to be working closely with Jonathan Green from Meanjin. He's really encouraged me to write more nonfiction, and I wrote an essay for Meanjin. I think it was 2016, called Heroic Men and Helpful Women. Mm. And it was really about when something as huge as the bushfires of Black Saturday comes through, that kind of offers this really stripped back environment where kind of outdated gender roles seem to sprout up. And well, I mean, they might sprout up, but they're also quite prevalent, I think, as well, still, even though we consider that we've made lots of changes. And in Kangaroo Paw, I was thinking about kind of my own experience moving through the world as a woman as well, in all different scenarios, and how there's a lot more pressure on women to look a certain way, to be a certain way, and the dangers sometimes of being a woman in the workplace, and especially such a masculine workplace as working in emergency services. And I know there's a lot of work being done in the space to change that, but I was really interested in that. And then there was the added element of her being pregnant throughout it and dealing with that in a very male, masculine workplace. And I think, you know, after Black Saturday, it was interesting. I guess interesting is one word, to watch the news and just see male heroism really celebrated, and women being shown, you know, making sandwiches for the CFA or huddled in dams, and men standing on the top of their houses with, you know, a garden hose and in their thongs, and that in itself is a really dangerous narrative for both sexes, because, you know, I think the death toll after Black Saturday was, there was a lot more men, I think, I read somewhere, but it's just that false sense of man versus bush, and you can protect your house and your belongings and all of that stuff that's so linked into your self-worth as a man in those traditional gender roles. I was just going to say, but when the bushfire has the heat of two Hiroshima bombs, you know, you can't, there's nothing you can do in that situation to defend, so.
In Kangaroo Paw, there's such an uncomfortable, for a reader, especially for myself, I'm a cis white male reader, to see how embodied Chloe's experience is through Kangaroo Paw and the way that men are able to sort of leverage this. It seems almost this really benign power. If you brought it to their attention, they probably wouldn't be conscious that they were doing it. But to make her feel so embodied, like she is just a physicality that is subject to their stare. I also, what you were just saying there about the roles, the what happens in Kangaroo Paw with Chloe as a member of the Country Fire Authority is, versus that stereotype you described, is very much sort of counterpointed in Sticks, but then also in Stay Go, where you have a young girl recalling at one point a memory of seeing a female firefighter and what that meant to her, and then a completely reversed role where you've got a man trying to get his wife into the car. She wants to stay. She wants to be the protector. And I just loved the variety and the way I was able to see these perspectives.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think that's the thing too, is it can be really easy to fall into talking about these issues in a real binary way, but it's just so complex and I do remember, yeah, I remember being at primary school. I went to Christmas Brook Primary School. There was like 30 kids from prep to grade 6 in total. And I do remember the CFA coming and telling us, you know, if a fire comes, you've got to get in your woolen boots, your woolen top and your boots and stuff. And there was always that lingering kind of threat. But I remember there was a woman that day, and I remember she was so strong, so powerful and so kind. And I it's not black or white, but yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that.
I'm speaking with Alice Bishop. You're on Final Draft on 2SER 107.3, and we're discussing A Constant Hum. And as I mentioned, Alice's collection features nearly 50 stories. We've really only touched on not even a half dozen of them yet, Alice. And it's so hard to know how to end this conversation because there's so much I want to talk about. But I thought maybe I could bring us to a story. I think it's the second story in the collection, so very early in the collection, Just a Spark. And this is Linda's story, and it takes us to the courtroom where a man is being tried for lighting what would become a horrific bushfire. And in Linda's search, she's trying to find some kind of understanding at this trial, but it also seemed to speak to the impossibility of fathoming the enormity of the tragedy, to putting some sort of rational framework on it. What was happening in this story, and do you think it's possible to ever understand tragedy of such enormity? Does it even help us to try to?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and I think that kind of is a good summary for the book, because I don't know if you ever can grapple with something like that, and I think about that with what we were talking about earlier with, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be in a war zone or to be fleeing a country and how you kind of grapple with that. But so the second story in the collection is obviously about arson, and I wrote it quite a few years ago, and then I read Chloe Hooper's beautiful book, The Arsonist, which most listeners will know focuses on Black Saturday. And it was really framed from the arsonist's kind of, not necessarily point of view, but it really kind of showed the reader both sides of the story. And I think in Just a Spark, I was trying to focus on how she was going to rebuild after losing so many people in her family, and how you would grapple with going to court. And I have a close friend who just lost her cousin, Natalina Angok, in Melbourne in what was allegedly a brutal murder, and we went to court for that process. And I think it's impossible to put a framework on these issues, but we have to, you know, we have to go through the legal system, we have to face up to people in court, and I don't think those stories come through as much as there is a big focus on the kind of perpetrator, or on the disaster, or on the thing that inflicts the trauma, and at the expense of that, some really important stories kind of fall by the wayside. And I hope that answers your question.
I think that does. Okay. I think you've started a conversation there about some really important issues around the way we frame narrative, and particularly who we center in narrative and the ways we forget other people that perhaps we can take up at another time.
Yeah, I mean, and I think equally it's important to focus on both sides. But yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. We sometimes tend to forget the other stories for the sensational headline. And I think probably what's important to acknowledge here is that for many readers like myself, they'll know nothing firsthand of what's being written in A Constant Hum, and that is good. I guess we probably wouldn't wish this on people if it doesn't have to happen, but A Constant Hum is such an amazing, beautiful, important insight. So I would really encourage people to get out and experience this collection. I'm speaking with Alice Bishop. She is the author of the collection A Constant Hum. Alice, thank you so much for all the time you've taken today.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thanks for your really thoughtful questions.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3, and this is Final Draft. Thank you again to Alice Bishop. Alice and I were just discussing her short story collection, A Constant Hum. Now, before we get on to the rest of the show, where we're going to do a little bit of a first birthday celebration for the Great Conversations podcast, I want to share a track. This is from Emma Russick, and the track is I Could Say.
doesn't change you, then I don't know a thing that will. At least I can always count on you for something undefinable. I feel like I've crossed seas for you, and you wouldn't know it. But I feel like I've moved mountains for you. And I could say goodbye, but I'd come around. And I could say goodbye, but I'd change my mind.
You are on 2SER 107.3, and it is that time where you are listening to Books, Writing and Literary Culture. It's called Final Draft. Now, right there, we heard a track from Emma Russick. That was I Could Say. My name is Andrew Popel, and every week I get to present Final Draft to you on the airwaves Saturday morning, and also you can listen back on Wednesday mornings. And what you might not know if you tune in every week on the old wireless is that Final Draft is also a podcast. The Final Draft Great Conversations podcast hit the digital airwaves 12 months ago at the beginning of July 2018. And I'd love to encourage you to check it out because we're celebrating our first birthday. And really, I mean, it took us long enough. Final Draft has actually been a mainstay of 2SER's programming for many years, and podcasting was always going to be the next logical step. Myself, I've been working on Final Draft for nearly 6 years now, and I've had the chance to interview a host of fabulous Australian and international guests. Some of them I've gotten to know really well over the years, and others, you know, look, maybe I've only just met them on the phone. It always strikes me that even if I've only met some of these people on the phone, these artists had so many wonderful ideas and stories to tell. So often I'd be on the phone with a fabulous author, like let's say Alice Bishop, who featured on today's show. Alice and I spoke for the better part of an hour, and even at the end, there is just so much we could have said. And often, Final Draft being a half-hour program, there was so much of the conversation that didn't make it to air. I mean, that's sometimes the nature of these things, but I wanted to share more of these great conversations with you and help you get to know these books that you maybe you already love them, maybe you're waiting to discover them, help you get a little bit more of them. So with the Great Conversations podcast, we finally had a chance to share all of the great parts of these chats that used to often make it onto the cutting room floor. And every week I now get to have a really long chat with an author, knowing that I can share all these wonderful insights with you. Now, if you're regularly tuning in on Saturday morning or on the playback, you might be wondering where you can get these extended episodes. So you can look us up wherever you're listening to your digital audio. So on your phone, your laptop, your tablet, even on your wearables, you're going to be able to find us on your favorite podcast app. Just plug us in and you're ready to listen. You can subscribe and a new episode will just pop automatically into your podcaster, ready to go. And if you're not sure about podcasts yet, all you have to do is Google Final Draft Great Conversations and look for our distinctive blue and yellow logo. You're going to be able to play that straight from whatever device you are on. And as I said before, if you subscribe, a new one's going to pop up. And you're also going to have access to a whole year of back episodes. That's something like 60-odd episodes once you count in all the bonuses and special features. So to commemorate our first podcast birthday, I asked listeners to go back and revisit their favorite episodes, and I'm so appreciative of the support and feedback that people have given over our first year on the podcast. Our first episode was Bram Press's The Book of Dirt, through to our latest, which is going to be available today, featuring Alice Bishop's A Constant Hum. You've all shown how much you love Aussie writing across formats and genres. Since the beginning, since a year ago, we've doubled our listenership and we've reached book lovers across Australia, as well as in Singapore, Spain, the US and the UK, Korea, Germany. Across the map, thousands of people have discovered Aussie writing on Final Draft. So I asked you to vote with your ears, and you really have. There's been just a great response. People have really been tuning in. And so I just want to share some of your favourite episodes. Now, at the time, I was so pleased to share our number one episode. I find it a very important book. It's gone on to win just so many awards. And look, it's a book that's not without, I guess, some sadness and tragedy. It is Behrouz Bouchani's No Friend But the Mountains. Behrouz Bouchani, as we speak, is still imprisoned on Manus Island. And he wrote this book through text, through voice messages that he was able to send to friends and collaborators in Australia who have, with his translator Omid Tafidjian, put together this book, No Friend But the Mountains. It is an incredibly important book and it is getting well-deserved attention. It has also been your most listened to, your most favourite book on the podcast in the last year. But look, another book coming in at number two, but a book that has not left our top rankings every week and has got huge attention more recently is Michael Muhammad Ahmed's The Lebs. Now, Michael Muhammad Ahmed has been recently on the long list for the Miles Franklin, and he's now on the short list for the Miles Franklin. And The Lebs is an absolutely stunning book, and it has not left your favourite listens in the weeks and the months since that conversation went up. We've also featured a host of other popular books, books that are getting huge international attention. Heather Morris's The Tattooist of Auschwitz came in at number three, and Chrissy Neen, who I just adore talking to whenever she comes on the show's Wintering, was in at number four. The Australian Classics Book Club has also featured really prominently in your favourite listens, as well as old favourites. Milena Marchetta, who, of course, wrote Looking for Ala Brandy, her latest, The Place on Dalhousie, has also, even though it only came out very recently, been one of your favourite listens. So that is some of your favourite listens on the Great Conversations podcast. And if you were not aware that these four conversations were available on the podcast, I'd encourage you to get out, check them out now. I am running out of time here on Final Draft today. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure to host the show every week. And I'm not going anywhere. I will be back next week. But if you need more Final Draft, if you need more books, check us out on the Great Conversations podcast. After you stick around for the Vulture's Nest, they're coming up next, and they always have an essential look at the week in news. I'm going to leave you. My name is Andrew Popel, and this has been Final Draft. Until next week when we meet again, happy reading, and bye for now.
I woke up on a
Spunk is busy this winter with releases from Bill Callahan, David Berman's Purple Mountains, and Emma Rossack.
Winter Blue.
Emma Rossack's beautiful new album, Winter Blues, is launched at the Golden Age Cinema in Sydney on Saturday, 10th of August. Also available on Spunk are new vinyl reissues from Jack Ladder, Holly Throsby, Machine Translations and The Middle East. Spunk is a proud supporter of 2SER.
My mind has just been blown.
2SER.com.